Seeing a real quasi-indefatigable zenolith, the smaller, more compressed audio files finally found the perfect the perfect codec, compressor, decompressor, to use for speech. I like it. It's a little on the old side. It really hasn't been updated in eons, but I'm trying to find ways so modern modern voice file thing can handle it. It looks like we're going to have Windows Media Player be able to. It looks like it should be able to work. It's just a matter of getting the right codecs to make it work. It's amazing. You know, it's amazing technology. I'm glad people have at least keep slapping it into new codec packs so that you can continue to use it. So hopefully at some point here I'll make sure and I'll give you some instructions on how to pardon me, how to make this work better. I keep getting little ding-dongs from my phone that tell me that it's time to be doing something, and I guess I'm not doing it as adequately as it wants me to. That's tough. I'm not here to make my cell phone happy. I'm right now in the car, driving back to Kamkiri, talking to you. So you are, whoever you are who's listening to me, you're the most important person right now. We're going to talk a little bit about what's important in life. How many times have I done this? Guy, it's going to be probably the 10,000th time. But you take a look and you really can't get too concerned about things. You know, politics, it's important that we try to put good people in there. The fact that they aren't good should only bother you if you were snookered and you put a bad person in. I think that's important. I think you should go into this stuff with your eyes wide open and saying, yeah, were they hiding evil? Sure. Could I have seen it before? If you couldn't have, nobody's going to sit there and take out you, much less God, for instance. If this guy, let me talk about what's most important, because I think it's really interesting. I think it's really important not to give over all your thought process, all your logic to like one or two things. For the simple reason that if you're wrong about those one or two things, it screws up everything. It totally ruins your entire life. I have been listening to a man, he does a libertarian podcast, and his name is Stefan Molyneux, I guess. He's from Great Britain, and he now lives in Canada. They escaped England for some reason. I forget why. Anyway, he is a very dedicated, devoted atheist. If you could say, I don't know if you could call an atheist militant, but if you could, he's a militant atheist. You know, he spent gobs of time. And I'm not to say that it didn't just, you know, that he shouldn't have spent so much time on it. It certainly indicates how he feels about atheism. He talks about his family and his home life. I kind of get the impression that he hates God, or he hates the concept of God, because if there were a God, and he probably might have wished there was at some point in his life, that he wouldn't have had the crappy life he had. He really talks about that his parents were not good parents at all, probably abusive. And I can get the impression that when he was younger, he would turn to God and say, God, save me from this. And he wasn't being saved. And then he developed a real hatred for God-y things. God, you know, God like this, you know, whatever. That he just decided that, and then he decided that he needed to channel that, so I guess he turned it into being an atheist. So much so that it isn't enough that he doesn't believe in God. He thinks everybody else who believes in God is an idiot and doesn't deal in logic. So he has married himself to our present form of science as if it is an absolute. As if it has always been this way, and, you know, our present understanding of science is perfect, which is just silly. And I don't mean to say that because I don't want to take away his God. His God is science. His God is rhetoric and logic that... You know, I really don't want to take that away from it. It's good. It's got us this far, and I hope it's going to get us much further down the road. Stefan's trouble, for me, in my mind, is that he sees our present development as sufficient for, for him. You know, every time I listen to him, I it's almost, I don't argue with him particularly while he's listening. I listen to him, which I think would make him very happy. Being a very, how do you refer to it? A very non-dogmatic Mormon. You know, I don't tend to follow the party line because it's the party line. The times that I do follow the party lines, because I believe it. It isn't just a blind faith thing. I don't do a lot of blind faith things. I do some. Because that's what God seems to ask for, is I need you to step out on this limb, and I'll take care of you, but you have to step out on the limb. And you go, well, are you there? And he goes, you wait and see. He doesn't like that. He went through a whole litany of how God couldn't possibly be true. And I mean, he spent two or three podcasts on it, probably about an hour and a half. And he came up with all kinds, you know, he just rattled off dozens. It's obvious he's thought about this a lot because I don't think he was reading from a script. He was being very, very articulate off the top of his head about all the proofs that he had that there wasn't a God. Now, it's really funny because he's fallen into what I consider to be a pretty classical trap, which means that you build your evidence upon given statements that aren't, I don't consider given. You know, he says, well, this is true, and that tears down the whole thing. But let me give you another reason why it's not true either, and it's this. And the second statement that he makes, this is the truth, is built upon the first. You know, it's like if in programming, which I think you would understand, it's like he builds his reality on a bunch of nested if statements. You know, if this is true, then, and you're going at some point, you know, so down at the bottom, down inside all these nested ifs, it finally says, if this is all true, then there is no God. Now, he says that since this and this and this are not true, you know, And he kept saying that these were all discretes, and they weren't. They were nested. They were built one upon another. Each succeeding thing that he gave for being why there couldn't be a God was built upon the kind of framework he had already laid for it before. And I'm saying that he built the framework wrong. and that I can push down his little playhouse of there can't possibly be a God, and so you don't have to worry about it, and believing and acting. He even considers parents teaching kids their concept of God to be abusive. And I don't think that's just my take on it. I think that's actually what he was, I think that's pretty much what he said, and not just once, but several times. He really considers the passing on, the transmitting of a quote-unquote godly philosophy onto children as being a form of abuse. And then if you did that, he's angry at you. I mean, he's not like, well, let's just live and let live. I wouldn't do that to my kids, but you can do whatever you want to in yours. No. He was very much, I think you're being abusive, and you need to stop. Like, if he wasn't very libertarian, he would be the first one to write a law against parents being able to teach their children what they want to teach them. Which is really funny, because later on, he goes into that, and he says, I think everybody should be able to do that. But then it's almost like, well, no, because if you teach them about God, I think you're stupid, dumb, and I think you're more hurtful than you're helpful, and, you know, I don't really know what kind of punishment he thinks is adequate for that, except to be browbeaten by Stephen Molyneux, or how it's pronounced. I really don't want to offend him by saying his name wrong, because I'm certainly not trying to denigrate him at all. Except to say, I think for a person that seems so married to the scientific method and to logic, has created a cute little fallacy for himself that makes him feel more comfortable about what happened to him. And I don't think it's working. Well, I gotta take a drink. I like water put in an old orange juice container because it still tastes a little like orange juice. And it cuts some of the weird flavor you get from some waters. And I appreciate that because I don't buy bottles of water particularly. I fill up my bottles. You know, I'll buy it on occasion when I need a new container. And I fill that up with water from other places. Oh, Stephen. He's got a wonderful podcast. I listened to the first few of them, and I really, really, really liked it. Unfortunately, he's so off in fringe territory that I think that his good ideas get lost in his militancy about atheism. He's kind of the, could you call it an antichrist? I guess you could. You know, it isn't enough that he's a non-Christian. He actively fights Christianity, at least on this podcast. I don't know. He's alienated everybody around him. You know, there's so many people that just don't talk to him anymore. And he actually spent a podcast talking about how he felt about battling for logic. His God is logic. So he battles for his God as stridently as any devout evangelical Christian fights for God. Or for Christ, or for their concept of it. So I put him in the same camp as being really kind of out there wacko. And unfortunately, it really takes away from the message that he has about freedom. And he's got some wonderful ideas about how to make this happen. I think he's a little Pollyannish. I think he is a little too enamored of anarchy. He's also an anarchist. And he's very, you know, he trusts humans a lot, that when put in these positions, they won't just immediately turn to evil. And I go, well, even in the best circumstances, people are going to turn to evil if they're not checked by something. Evil is the tendency, just like going toward entropy is always the tendency, unless something keeps you from that. My belief, my understanding of these things goes in that direction. Now, he would probably rip me to shreds by saying, oh, no, there's this guy that said this, this guy said that. I said, you know what? I don't really care what other people say. I'm kind of an intuitive person. I'm not a, I'm not much of a thinker, honestly, and which just sounds strange because of the thoughts I have. But I'm much more of an intuitive person. I tend to look for the truth that I can feel. See, if you're to do a Myers-Briggs on me, and I've had it done to me once officially, and then I've done it a couple of times since then, taken some tests to try and see what kind of personality type I have. And I'm an INFP, an introverted, intuitive, feeling, perceiver. Is that what the last one is? INFP. I remember the last one. It's probably a perceiver. So anyway, that's kind of how I look at things. And that's okay. You know, he's going to say, well, you're not big enough, so I'm just going to dismiss you because you're stupid. And, you know, I think it's very easy for somebody in his place to say that and then just kind of dismiss you because he feels like he's won some argument. And you're going, well, this isn't a question of arguments, you know. And he's funny because you can see some contradictions in what he says. This isn't to pick on him particularly. A lot of people feel this way. I don't think he's unique. He has a mindset and a philosophy that is followed by several people. And Ayn Rand is one that probably comes up as being the most, somebody that does that. Although I've only read just a little bit of Ayn Rand, I liked her until I started looking at the fact that she wasn't a particularly moral person. She was kind of, I didn't like her as a person. And that's one of the things that bothers me. I can separate, to a degree, I think, I can separate ideas from people, from behaviors. I can do that to a degree. But I really do have great respect for people who are, I don't want to use the word moral because that's kind of a weird term that doesn't really, you can't count on that term meaning the same thing to the same people. It isn't an absolute. At least in this day and age, so I don't like to use it. You want people to be consistent? It's hard to be consistent. When you start asking people they must be consistent, that's setting those people up. None of us are terribly consistent. I'm glad I'm not, because I want those glittering moments when I wasn't consistent, when I did something really amazing, to be the great things about me. You know? I want my glittering jewels to show. I don't want people to say, well, let's just take Jay the big broad picture. Let's take a look at every single hour of every day and count up every day, every time he was doing magnificent stuff or every time he was doing not so magnificent stuff. And, you know, well, I don't think anybody's going to score well on that score. So it's difficult to go in that direction and say, this is how we're going to rate people. How consistent are they? Are they consistently fantastic and wonderful and always on target? People change. I changed. I've changed a lot. I used to be somewhat of a, I can't say I was a socialist, but that was kind of appealing. It was appealing to say we can all get together and make a wonderful place and hold hands and sing kumbaya. It just felt good. And then when I got older, and I started wanting to do things, but everybody said, oh, no, 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 there's laws against that. You can't do that. And people quite willing to turn you in, and I come from a religious tradition where you obey the laws, even the stupid ones. So I end up just having to obey all the laws, whether I like it or not, and trying to live within the freedom that I'm allowed so that I can do, you know, what I want to do. And it's kind of tricky because there's a lot of things I'd like to do that I just can't, I don't get around to actually doing. So I don't want to sit here and browbeat another person about their attitudes. I will talk now about what I think. It's very easy, I think, to, and this is what Stefan does, and it's not just him, a lot of people do that. They manufacture a villain, and then that villain they've manufactured, of course, is pure evil, or pure bad. In Stefan's case, it's God, and he manufactures an imperfect God, and when he says, but God has to be perfect, yes, he can immediately switch that off and say, God is not perfect, therefore, whoop, he's gone. It's really easy to make that, to do that. Most people do. Most people who are concerned with quote-unquote truth or facts, which I'm sorry, very little in our universe is factual. He's very much, I only trust what I see with my eyes. And he says, and he went through a whole thing about how your eyes don't deceive you. Sometimes your perception of what your eyes sees deceives you. And you go, okay, I can live with that. I really don't know. You know, I know that to make things work, especially in logic or science, there are lots of givens there. And one of the givens has to be, I have to be able to perceive things. Therefore, I have to trust that everything that my perceptions tell me, they're telling me the truth. They can't lie to you, or they can't be slanted. Of course, I don't think he takes into account magic at all, where something looks like it's happening, but it's really not. Something else is happening. You know, magic is all about smoke and mirrors and making things appear one way when they're really another way. Or being just quick on the draw. So, you know, I'm not saying, oh yeah, there's somebody out there that's just trying to screw all of a sudden and play games with us. But a lot of people perceive God that way, or it's really easy to have thought that God was that way. You know, there's just as many atheists who say, oh, there is no God. There are just as many people who say, yes, there is a God out there, but from what I see and from what I perceive, God is kind of nasty, spiteful. He doesn't seem to have a problem with death, dying, or suffering, and stuff like that. Of course, I think if you went up against a person like that, Stefan, I think they would have a very interesting talk, and they would probably walk away very angry and spitting at each other, just because of the way Stefan is. You know, he would be arguing that there was no God. This guy said, oh, sure there's a God. He's just not very nice. And it's easy to do that. I don't know what religious tradition Stefan came from before he became an atheist. Since he was in Great Britain, I think he was probably an Anglican, you know, which is just a couple of nudges over from Catholic. And I know that really offends Anglicans to have that said, but it really is true. When it comes right down to the beliefs that each one of them have, there's a lot in common. Enough that you can pretty much, you know, well, I'm not going to make comparisons, you know, enough that their concept of God, for instance, is very compatible with each other. They might have arguments over liturgy. They might have arguments over you know, the supremacy of the Pope. That's the biggest thing. Or they might decide to choose their priesthood differently, or, you know, priests can be married in the Anglican Church and they can't in other churches, or whatever. I really don't know enough about either one of them to say this is definitely what they believe. I don't know. Yeah, if you want to know what a Catholic believes, ask a Catholic. Don't ask me. I'm a Mormon. If you want to know what I believe, ask me. I'll be reticent to say that I'm a good example of somebody to come ask, well, what does the Mormon Church believe? And I'll try to give you my best, but it really is my concept of what I believe, and I put the term Mormon on there because I perceive myself as a Mormon, and I'm trying to follow that way of thinking. So anyway, you come up with this concept of God, right? And you come up with what I call the Catholic concept. It's pretty much propped up by Protestants, too. Protestants don't really walk away particularly from the Catholic concept of God. They had other issues with the Catholic Church. It wasn't, I don't perceive it as being a nature of God type of thing. Most Protestants are just Catholics that don't like one part or another part of that church and have since broken away, and then had to come up with lots of justifications of why they did it. And some of those are similar to each other and some aren't. You know, that's why you have so many congregations. I don't come from one of those. I'm not from the splinter group of anybody. You know, I am a follower of Jesus Christ as put forth by Joseph Smith, you know, and I didn't wander off from that like other like splinter groups, Mormon splinter groups, which aren't Mormon, sorry, have done. You know, for one reason or another. Oh, we liked polygamy, that was great, we're gonna go over here. Oh, we didn't like polygamy, so they went over there. You know, Joseph Smith was a fallen prophet at some point. Some point he went nuts. And so we do what we believe what Joseph Smith said up until such and such a time. And after that, he was being influenced by the people. He was a whack job, whatever. It's really easy, given the Catholic God, for lack of a better term, it's really easy to say the Catholic God is schizophrenically crazy. It's really easy for a couple of reasons. Number one, most people have, number one, the wrong concept of God. Is it based on the Catholic model? Yes. It's also based on a kind of weird mythology that's kind of grown up around God. And you say, God is this and God is that. And you're going, but I can see evidence where that's not true. And that's what makes it really easy to have atheists. Atheists use some logic and they figure out that what's being told them isn't true. Or it couldn't be true. It doesn't make any sense is the biggest term you can use. Your God makes no sense. And so, especially people like Stefan, for instance, it's really simple just to walk away. It's really simple. You've built up this God. It's been taught to you. He thinks everybody in the whole world believes that this is God. This is the God. Everybody says, oh yes, that's God. That's his traits. Yes, yes, yes. And you go, no, they're not. When I think about Stefan, and he's not the only one, like I said, there's lots of people in his thing, in his way of thinking. Is it predominant? I don't think so. But it's certainly thinking man's. I think if there a lot of professors would find Stefan very, very refreshing, appealing, wonderful. And I wish I could think things my way. The more educated they are, they tend to be that way. And I say they, you know, like I'm uneducated. I'm reasonably educated. I went to college. yada, yada, yada. I went through all that, although I'm kind of a practical guy. I went to college for practical reasons, not to gain great insight, because I'm not really looking for that from college. I was looking for a job from college. And I got it. And I got several, actually. Okay. All these people, kind of like Stefan, are kind of, it's almost like they're in a laboratory maze. Now, I've seen pictures where they have these huge mazes that they put the rats in, and they seal up the top so the rat can't jump over the walls. They have to go through the maze as they're told. You know, they'll have the various little things, like if they press on this button, they'll get food. If they press on this button, they'll get, you know, an electric shock. If they, you know, and there's all kinds of little things. And the scientists stand over and study them, check off the little things on their little clipboards. And I picture Stefan and those that have some of the same ideas they do is saying, yes, they have come up with plenty of little proofs of the world that they are feeling really, really comfortable, that they have pretty much got this place nailed down. You know, we got it. When you do this, this happens. When you do that, that happens. When you go off around this corner, well, that happens. And when you do all these things happen. That's kind of the way they like their world. Very predictable. Very much going by rules that they have observed over time. Now, this is a bad way to learn things. It's not a bad way to live. It's a bad thing on which to hang truth. Because take that laboratory. What happens if that scientist starts, you know, playing some games? You know? What happens if that scientist starts flipping around some of those walls without really telling anybody he's doing it? Especially, I guess he doesn't really tell the rats. And all of a sudden, reality, at least on that plane of existence where those rats are living, has changed. And you go, holy moly, what happened? Whoa! That's not the way life should be. And they go, well, who are you to say how life should be? And they go, no. Logic says this, and our experience has taught us this. And it's just not right that what we believe to be true for so long all of a sudden just doesn't work. And it's like, come on, go back in time. When we went from the world being flat to the world being round, a sphere, an ellipsoid, whatever, that had to change a lot of things. There's a lot of resistance to it. You know, that was believed just as strongly as any religion, that science idea, world's flat. And all of a sudden, you change things. Is Stefan at some point going to be hit by one of these big changes? And when he is, how is that going to affect him? You know, if one day the sun doesn't go down, what is he going to do? Now he's going to swear up and down it'll never happen, that this is the way it is, and if that ever does happen, it'll take millions and millions of years to do it, and we'll slam into the sun. The gravitational pull of the sun will lessen, and we will start spinning further and further away from the sun till we just, you know, start heading for deep space. That sounds stupid. Our course would, well, I'm not going to explain this. It doesn't make any difference. What happens when the science upon which, and a logical process on which he hangs everything, what happens when we find either something better that seems better able to explain some things that we don't understand? And what does that do to him? Does that change his whole worldview? Does all of a sudden he have to switch over to something else? Does he have to ascribe to a new God? I suppose so. And what is he going to do with that? I mean, it sounds really nice now. You know, I think he's got everything pretty much pinned down. A lot of people do. A lot of people don't believe in God because they think they've got a pretty good handle on the way things work on Earth. It's not that tough. It's not that difficult. Now, there's plenty of things out there that we can't, that modern science can't explain. That all the things that we have just can't tell you why things work that way. Now, he conveniently ignores those like so many people. So many people ignore the fact that there are still lots of things out there that we don't understand. Now, they have great hope that at some point they will. It's just that they don't have enough information or whatever else. That's not a bad way to think. But someday, but you know what? That was the method used in the 1600s, and a lot of scientific, quote-unquote scientific theories had to get pushed aside because it just didn't work. The whole, you know, people bring up instead of the Earth being the center of the universe and everything revolving around it, that it became, the Earth is just one thing revolving around something else. You know, we revolve around the sun. Our sun revolves around the center of a Milky Way galaxy, perhaps, and so on. So, I really wonder about those people, because they create a beautiful, well-constructed box in which to shove themselves. Just like a laboratory rat, they get very comfortable inside that box and say, I've got it all figured out. I know what's going to happen today. I know what's going to happen tomorrow. If something happens, I can use logic and reason to tell you exactly why it happened. So that we can either prevent it or make it happen again or whatever. Whatever purposes ultimately crop up to take care of this stuff. And I think it's really easy. I wish they would step outside the box and say, you know what, I'm in a box. I'm in a pretty box. And if I were to spend any kind of time outside, then I'd see that some things might work differently. Or I can create a box where people don't know I exist. That happens with the scientist maze all the time. That's rule number one of a scientist maze. You set it up, and you leave it there, and you watch what happens, and you observe. You know, God may be a fantastic scientist, and then he sets this whole thing up, and you don't see it. The rats don't know anybody's there. All they know is they're in this building with lots of fun and interesting things to do, maybe, or painful things that can happen to them that they will choose to avoid, you know. It's easy to start feeling like a rat and start feeling very comfortable in the environment in which you are put. You don't have any other environment to speak of. It's like being on this world. It's really easy to control a world because it's a closed little system. You know, you can set into place all the mechanisms that are needed to keep the thing running, and then just let it go. And watch what happens. It's very easy to think that this is all the only reality there is. And once you kind of have that nailed down, you can feel really comfortable with yourself and say everything's great, you know, until we slam into the sun, until a asteroid comes to collide with the Earth, until a giant airwing sneezes and totally destroys all life. You know, it could be any number of things. You know, a great thing is the science has an explanation for that. It just says, well, you die and something, little bitty mites will will grow to become the next sentient being. It kind of makes it funny because it's like, well, if that's true, how come more species haven't become sentient like we are? How come they don't speak? How come they don't have as evolved a culture as we do? How come all of this? Of course, people go funny things like, oh, dolphins look at us and they just laugh and laugh and laugh because they think we're stupid. Maybe we are, I don't know. No, I don't think so. I don't know. I am thinking. Very interesting thoughts. You have to look at it that way. You have to look at it as if you're in a maze. Because by Mormon thought, which is as far as I know, a pretty good way to look at these things, it works. It works. And people go, oh no, I can flush your thing down the toilet in 2 seconds. It's because they are myopic. And that's why I say that to Stefan and many people just like him, said, you have a very myopic view. You don't know. You found some pretty interesting explanations for all these things, but you really don't know. It's really easy to say that something didn't happen, that you're delusional. That's everybody's big excuse for people who say, I saw something, but I can't prove it. I don't have any proof of it. And they go, well, that's because you're delusional. And, you know, so I like Occam's razor because it tells me that the simplest explanation is usually the best. Well, let's just keep saying that everybody's just crazy. Because that's easy. You know, it doesn't even take thought to say, well, you've lost your mind. Your mind's playing tricks on you. Your senses are not being interpreted correctly. If they were being interpreted correctly, you would come to the exact same conclusion I do. But because you don't, you must be stupid. Which is kind of Stefan's way of looking at it, which is kind of sad. But I can imagine there's so many more people just like him out there. So the Mormon view, life on this earth is minuscule. It's tiny. It's a very tiny bit of your existence. I like to think of it as a college exam. That someplace else, on some other, you can call it plane of existence, whatever you want to, at some other point, you know, we had learned certain things and we did certain things, and now we're here on Earth taking a test. And that's all it is. It's like a college test. It's like sitting in a room and a bunch of desks or being put into a circumstance. I think back to Star Trek. There was an episode, Season 7, I know that because I have Season 7 on DVD, where she wants to become a full commander. She wants to take the command test of what you can do, you know, so that you can run a starship. And her major test ended up being put in this circumstance where she had to send somebody off to their death for the greater good type stuff, which I don't really subscribe to the greater good particularly. Sometimes I do. I'll be really honest. When it comes to God saying, Jay, you need to do this because this is ultimately going to be a good thing, I don't have a problem with that. Now, having another person tell me that and me not being sure that's right, I got a problem with that. If it's a greater good being manufactured by a person, I got a problem. If it's manufactured by God, I don't have a problem. I trust God for a variety of reasons, which I may get to here. It depends how much time I have. I'm nearly home. If you look at it as just this little thing, it's easy to think of it as a lab experiment. You know? Make a simple world. It's not that big of a deal. It may be very much more complicated and have very much more intricate rules or much more simple rules somewhere else. You know, on a larger scale, I don't know what scale God deals in. I know he has many worlds with many people on them. And when you talk about his children, we're not talking about 5 or 6 or 2 or 1 like we're used to hearing about here. We're talking about billions and billions and billions and trillions and a whole bunch. So perhaps he has to take a different view of things than these things. I know he knows me personally because he's acting in my behalf personally. Is that interesting? Logically, I wonder if he would just pick that one apart too. I don't know. It's like taking an exam. Our time on Earth here is to see what kind of people we will be when put into kind of an isolated place away from the normal influences to do what you're going to do. It's like when you leave home, you know? You don't pretty much do what your parents tell you when you're at home. When you leave home, you start doing what you want to do, right? Well, that's kind of what this is. We used to live with God before we came here to Earth. And bang, now here we are in this circumstance, you know, where we think there's a God, but, you know, I don't see much evidence of him. You know, how those rats feel in the maze, I don't know what their thought processes are. But I'm certain of a few things. Number one, I'm pretty sure the scientists try to make sure that that in this test that they're doing on these rats to try to determine something, that they try to make sure that those rats don't know they're being watched. That those rats don't have a clue what's actually happening, why they're there. They're just doing what rats do. That's what we're doing down here on Earth. We're just doing what people do. Unless we choose to work to learn about God and say, why am I here? There's got to be a reason. A lot of atheists say there is no reason. A lot of agnostics say they don't want to know the reason. Well, there is no reason. And that God is just this guy, you know, using a magnifying glass and roasting ants. Whenever he just kind of feels a compunction to do it, like he's some kind of 3-year-old. I don't believe that at all. I believe God is very purposeful. He's trying to figure out what kind of a person that you are so that he can determine if he's going to give you the keys to the house. If he's going to teach you to be like him. He doesn't have to do it to everybody. You go, oh, well, God would be perfectly fair. And you go, under what circumstances is that true? Why would that be so? If that's true, and he was just, then what, for what purpose is this life? Now, you have to see that from the outside and say, this is only a small, minuscule part of this stuff. Why am I being given this test? What's the purpose of it? Most people will try to apply school philosophy to it, which is dumb, because most school has no real purpose. It's there to occupy your time while your parents go off and make money. Because our economy needs your parents off making money. We need to stick your kids in school so that you'll do, so that, you know, so that your parents will be free to do these things. The fact that you might learn something while you're there is simply a byproduct of the fact that you're always learning something. You know, they try to steer it. Doesn't work very well. That's, you know, it begs the whole purpose of life. And it says, why? Why is it here? Of course, atheists have a wonderful out. You know, let's use Occam's razor. The easiest thing to say is, there's no purpose. But who cares? And then Stephens starts talking about morality, and you're going, what? That's all manufactured crap. If there's no reason to be on Earth, if we're just slightly evolved animals, then why not just kill each other, grab as much gold as we can, live the life of luxury as long as we can, so that and that when we die, it's all over, and who cares? That justifies nearly everything. We shouldn't even lock people up for things, because who cares? They're just doing their nature. They're just doing what comes naturally, baby. So yeah, I'd be the first one to say, hey, if you're really an atheist, I don't know why you're getting all moralistic about anything. You just manufactured this crap as if it's something good. And it's funny, he anthropomorphizes evil. I wonder if other atheists do that too. You know, he doesn't believe in God, but I bet you he believes in Satan. Or at least in evil as a bad force out there, that people get dropped into evil, or that people are tending toward evil all the time. And you know what? I think the logic of his argument falls apart so readily, it's scary. It's not even to be considered because of its foolishness. Because it does. Once you start getting out to the bigger questions, it's like, why bother being moral? Why do good? Why even make laws? And if laws are made, why keep them? If there's nothing but nothing out there, if we're just parts of an organic amalgam down here, you know, any individual act of an individual person is meaningless in that sense. So why not just start popping off people? What does it matter? You're not really affecting anything. Life will go on. You know, people say, oh, we're going to destroy this world a million times over with nuclear weapons, and that's not good. And you're going, what? Why don't you give it a shot? Give it a try. See what happens. I bet you this world will survive. I mean, it might be like the moon. Probably knows how the moon got to where it is now. It just got nuked. I don't know. Or Mars, or Venus, or whatever else. For all we know, that's what happened there. We don't know. We have, oh, that couldn't possibly be true. And you go, that's because you have, number one, very little experience with these things. We all do. I'm not saying I've got any great insight into moon history. I don't. I don't have a clue. People look up at the moon and say, oh, look, there's a moon. You know, that's not all the observational skill we had on the subject of the moon. You know, we didn't have photographs of it a million years ago. It might have been different. You know, what would the Earth look like if we nuked it? You know, if we set off every nuclear bomb we had, well spaced all along the surface of the planet, would it start, would it, after a couple of thousand years, look just like Mars? You know, would all that energy vaporize all the surface water? We'd have nothing. Or would all, you know, I don't know what would happen. I really don't. Anyway, I guess it doesn't matter, except to say that one shouldn't hedge their bets on one or two basic assumptions. I think there is a God out there. I think he has a definite purpose. He's trying to figure out who can learn his job. And he has a certain, you know, he's gone. I think of him like a father. He can base the criteria on how he passes stuff on to others however he wants to. Can't he? You know, people go, oh, well, he can't just pick favorites like that. You go, why not? Why can't he pick favorites? Well, they say he's no respecter of persons. And you go, no, he doesn't like say, okay, all the white people over there, all the black people over there. He doesn't do that. I think that's what that means. But I think he certainly means that on an individual level, if you're a jerk, he's going to treat you like a jerk. If you're a wonderful person, he's going to treat you like a wonderful person. You know, anybody who says, well, God doesn't behave, God treats everybody just exactly the same, and you go, that's just stupid. Because that takes away, I mean, people are smarter than that. That's why people say there is no God, because God's dumb. And you go, no, our perception of him and what we throw out there as being what God is dumb. And if that's, and if you insist on saying God has to behave this way, then yes, your concept of God is that God is stupid. I'll just simplify it by saying your concept of God is stupid. Should I go a step further and say you're stupid too? I don't think I want to be that rude. I want to take into account that you've probably worked a little bit and used a little bit of logic to get where you are. Is it erroneous? Yeah. Be careful with logic. It can lead you in stupid directions. It can lead, you know, it's called being myopic. It's saying, I know a little bit about things, so I'm going to explode all the little things I understand into really big things. And you go, that's not a bad start, but you need to be prepared to walk away from it if it just doesn't work right, if it just doesn't hold water. And I think that's what a lot of these people get tied up into. These things just don't hold water over time. I mean, it becomes really simple. I mean, I guess it's true. There really only are two intelligent things to do. Either you believe in a proper concept of God, which I don't think very many people have, or you have to be an atheist. It's either he's there or he's not. And if he is there, then your trouble is, well, you got to figure out what to... Number one, how do you contact him? Number two, how do you get information from him? And how do you make sure that information's right? How do you know you're listening to the right source? And so, if I were an Occam's razor type of person, it's a whole lot simpler just to say there is no God and to make your life really simple, sort of. It seems simple until you start saying, hey, there's really no point, you know, there's just really no point in getting weird about this stuff. You know, if people are breaking laws, so, oh, you can't do that. They go, sure they can. I said, that's rule number one of being a criminal, is saying, hey man, there's no God. It's all about how much can I get for myself today? Everybody else is stupid. If they come up with laws that are supposed to stop me from doing what I want, well, screw them, I'm going to break the law. And, you know, break down chaos. Nobody likes that concept. Stephen Molyneux has this wonderful theory that if we were to get rid of all law, that we would come up with structures to make this stuff work. And although he may be right to a degree, there's a whole bunch of people that see absolutely no purpose in being in the public interest. There are even people who don't really want to be in their own interest, particularly they might be ill. Or our concept of ill. And then what do you do with those people? Because they might just indiscriminately go off, no, that's rare. And he's right there. He says, you know, that's pretty rare to have those kind of things. We can set up a structure to handle the rarities without inflicting it on everybody else. And I think that's true. Like I said, I really like a lot of what Stephen says. His whole concept of atheism and God, I think, are so screwed up and so, oh, God, pointless. Where is he going with it? Does he really want us to take this thing to its logical limits? I don't think he does. Because then, why on earth be moral? What difference does it make? Well, we need to save it for our future generations. And it's like, why? Screw them. There's going to be a meteor, man. Some damn meteor's just going to come wipe it all out. And all of your strugglings and sacrifices that you made for the future will all be for naught. Because they didn't really do anything. I mean, they may have made you feel better, I suppose. I doubt it. Because you would have gone, hey, wait a minute. You mean I could have just sloughed off and, you know, hung upside down by my toes and sold my feces to people that didn't know better? I could have just done that and lived a really good life and happy. Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Why did I not do that? I think that's the response you're more likely to get if what atheists said were true. The whole thing about morals outside of having a larger purpose for why am I being good, that needs to be there. And I don't think you can just say, well, we're going to manufacture because it's just more pleasant to live in a place where people are moral. And they go, not for me. You know, I'd say criminal would say, okay, sucker, I'm much happier if all of you guys think that way, but I don't. Boy, this thing is really ranged out in crazy directions. I don't mean to pick on Stefan. He's a good guy. He's got some really good ideas. I kind of like the guy. But I think he's absolutely nuts when it comes to God. So much so that I think he's almost kind of become irrational in his rationality. Oh, that's an interesting contradiction. This is Jay Nemro. God loves you. God wants you to do something amazing, so get to it. Have a good day.